have a new GTLDs running up to coffee, and then we have the IDN session, followed, of course, by the CCNSO dinner this evening. So we will talk about arrangements for the dinner in due course. And before we get started on SSRT, let me just give a few minutes to Andres, who, as you recall, did a fantastic job as speaker in the welcome ceremony. So well done. Very proud of you. Andres is also involved in the programme working group, who are responsible and do a great job putting this programme together, and wanted a few words with that hat on.
Yeah, thank you very much. I know the agenda is full, so I will be really very brief, but I would like to remind you one important thing. You know, we have developed a survey that we ask you always to fill in. So, you know, I would like to stress how important it is for us. That's the probably only way how we are getting feedback, except some emails that some nice person sent us. So please fill the survey. It's very important for us. And to help you, to motivate you a little bit, I would like to announce that those guys who will fill the survey will probably get a gift tomorrow. A special gift, a very nice thing to train your brain. So please fill the survey, and tomorrow you will get a gift. It will be served here on first-come, first-served basis. I hope we will have enough of that. So please look at the surveys. Help us with that. It's very important for us and for you, actually, for the future meetings, to be able to improve and to make it better for you. So that's all I wanted to tell you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andres. Okay, so let's move on to the SSR recommendation session, and Jörg has very kindly agreed to chair. I'll hand over to you.
Okay, so once again, hello, everybody. On a very short notice, I got chair of this meeting, so if you feel I'm not on your agenda and you assume you might endure another DSSA presentation, no, it's not about that. It's it's just that Leslie asked me to be on this panel and chairing it because I'm not part of the SSRRT team. Whereas, on the other hand, I'm in a way a little bit involved in stability and security, so I might just lead you through this very session, and for sure this is your session, this is your opportunity to comment on the work that the SSRRT presented. And as far as I know, there have been some briefing material, and what we should focus on is specifically two recommendations. I think those are recommendation number one and number four, even though it's stated number three. You can see those if there weren't any pillars in your view on the screen. And well, should I read them out? Sure? Or not? Or just hand over and just let all the members of the SSRRT say something to their person, their name, and how they think this might be driven forward. Simon?
Thanks, Jörg. As you know, you elected Andre and me to represent as the representatives of, the CCNSO on the SSR review team. That was nearly 2 years ago now, scarily. We have a final report. The final report is here. It's up, available to see up on the ICANN website. I do urge you actually all to have a read of it. We didn't have a formal comment from the CCNSO, but there is now a formal comment period open for the board in terms of how these recommendations should be implemented. So it would be really good to have your feedback, and I'm sure the board would welcome that. Just a little before we talk about these recommendations, just a very brief 1 minute of history behind this. We had the great benefit as a review team of being able to work very closely with these two gentlemen on my right. And as we started to build the security and stability report, we were able to sit, particularly with Patrick, who was with us all the way, to say, Patrick, if you were to have a recommendation like this, is it implementable? Can you make this happen? And will it make a difference? So of the 28 recommendations in this report that you have here, we've had been able to have Patrick's stamp on that and say, I know we can go away and we can make this work. And so one of the great things about having that closeness and working with the ICANN security team as we did was that they've been able to continuously evolve their approach to SSR while we were writing the report. So we saw changes to the SSR framework, we saw changes to the budget, and we saw some of the work that we were already starting to put into our draft report actually being reflected in what was going on in terms of the new framework. And the latest FY13 framework really covers that extremely well, and we've seen such a huge change in the way things have been put together. So my preface to this is very much that this is very much a part, as I see, a sign of that ongoing relationship, in that even before the board have approved the recommendations, the SSR team is reaching out and consulting on actually getting on and implementing some of this stuff. And I think that's a great sign on the ICANN security team. So I just wanted to really start with saying these come from that report. They come from the very early part of the report where we sought to really understand and clarify ICANN's SSR remit. And this, I see, is a direct response to that early section of the report. So that's it from me, and I'll hand over to you.
So thank you for having us back at the CCNSO. Last year, we spoke to this group about our fiscal year 12 security, stability, and resiliency framework. And now, as Simon mentioned, we've had a chance along the way to not only take in the comments that we received from the CCNSO and other groups on last year's framework, but continue to learn while the review team was developing the report and make improvements for our fiscal 13 framework. That document's out for public comment now, and I encourage everyone here to take a look and provide feedback either on behalf of the CCNSO or individually. But what we really wanted to do was have a chance to talk about some of these higher-level questions. So before I turn it over to Jeff, while the review team was had posted their draft report in Costa Rica and had that out for public comment, from a staff perspective, we took the initiative to say, why don't we take recommendations 1 and 3, which I think now has been number 3 is now number 4 in the final report, and see if we can develop a draft statement of ICANN's role and remit that takes in all of the history, the bylaws, the affirmation of commitments, and really builds to make a clear and enduring statement of what ICANN's role and remit is in SSR. And this includes a draft statement of what ICANN's technical mission is. Some of these questions that are in the public comment may be intended to generate some higher level conversation, and we really welcome that and hope that this can be more of a dialogue rather than having us talk about the questions. And so we really want to use this as an opportunity to reach out.
Yeah. Very good. So just supporting what Patrick said, I'm Jeff Moss, by the way. What Patrick said is some of these questions really became important to me over the last couple of months when we were responding to this threat that luckily never materialized from Anonymous to attack the root server system. And so in trying to determine what the role of ICANN is in such a situation, we quickly found out that it's very unclear. It says that we have a role in global coordination, but you'll find within the board, within the staff, within everybody, everybody has a different view of what that means. And when you start talking to governments, they read that line and think, well, it says they're a global coordinator. That must be what they are. We'll treat them as such. And so it ended up creating a lot of confusion among governments and law enforcement around the world. So I'd like to personally find some clarity because it's really going to inform what the security team does in the future. So why don't we start the conversation or answer any questions? Or how do you want to work this?
Well, I think let us just start with some question referring to recommendation number 1, like ICANN should publish a single, clear, and consistent statement of its SSR remits and the limited technical mission. So anybody's got comments on that one? Well, then I might have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Given the term limited technical mission, what is really meant by this? Because I can think of a limited technical mission in a respect that This is referring to ICANN's mission to operate like the IANA contract, operate the L route. So there clearly is a limited technical mission. I understand that. On the other hand, diving a little bit into history, we've been talking about a DNS cert. And there had been discussions about whether a DNS cert is supposed to be operated by ICANN or not. And one of the obligations against this was that a lot of people were arguing against ICANN having any kind of operational obligations within that process. So given this term over here, limited technical mission, does this refer to that ICANN is not supposed to have any operational obligations aside of IANA and LRoute, or what does it really mean in that sense?
So what we've tried to do is focus on what it means to for us to coordinate and what are those things that are operational to ICANN. So you mentioned the IANA functions, the LRoute. We also included ICANN's KSK operations for the DNSSEC signing, as well as those things where we're involved more as a collaborator, facilitator, coordinator, and also areas where we're engaged but not leading, and trying to put some parameters around it so that we don't get into the same kind of situation that occurred with the debate over around a proposal for a DNS cert.
Any other comments or questions concerning recommendation number one? Not interests, not conflicting, everything's okay.
So
probably if the audience is not responsive, it might just be that, not that you're not too interested in your emails, but just that you're waiting for some kind of voting, and let me just do that. So referring to recommendation number one, would you please raise greens, reds, or oranges? So green, if you feel this is okay and no further clarification being need.
Well, before you do that,
okay.
The document is out for comment through the 16th of July. And so even though we're here at the meeting, we really wanted to use this as an opportunity to continue to communicate and also hear concerns from the community. And we've received four comments. Some of them have been quite thorough. From the ISP constituency has provided us 9 pages of very detailed input that will certainly go into changing this document. There will be edits and improvements to it. We're already seeing that from talking to other LAC TLD submitted a comment, and there will be other inputs received. So it would be helpful not to close it off now, but provide an opportunity.
Patrick, we're not trying to close it off now. We're just trying to get a sense of the feeling of the room.
So could we just again repeat, everybody raises green who feels the recommendation is okay and there's no further clarification needed, even though you might clarify afterwards. I can't put it on physically. Okay. Yeah. Thanks. So anybody's raising a red, like there has to be some more work done and some clarification still is needed? I'm going to grab you on that one, Hilda. So there are at least three and a half, because Road of Rose, the wrong color. But But then again, as there are at least three red cards, could you be a little bit, dive a little bit in your arguments, what you feel needs further clarification, or where some points might be that you just do not feel very comfortable with, like Hilde?
This is an orange card. What it signifies is, this is the first time I see the text, and what?
You're not off the hook. Even orange will do the thing.
I'm not prepared to feel anything about it until we've had more time to read it.
Okay. So anybody wants to comment? And I'm not asking somebody specifically anymore. Call enough? Oh, there is a question from Jacques.
Jacques Latteau, Witsura. So, to coordinate the overall global internet system, that's a big one, because here there's been talks of we need a global cert just for DNS, and on its own it wouldn't be very useful. You need to have a global cert for all of the internet, and there's various entities out there. Pretty much every country's got their own cert, and then there are groups of certs that are aligned with, like, FIRST is a group of certs that don't talk to other groups of certs. So overall, we need to have a global strategy on how we're going to have how we do security management on a global basis and integrate the DNS function within the whole system. So if we just talk about the DNS cert on its own, it still needs to integrate with everything else that's going on. So that's it.
Just have an observation, if it helps. When we did the research work behind this particular recommendation, and it ties in with a recommendation about feedback, actually, that's later on in the report, what we noticed was that on the whole, the community is pretty quiet when it comes to ICANN's SSR remit, until it felt threatened, and that was really interesting. And so when the issue of running a cert, or the possibility of establishing a DNS cert came into being, the CCNSO, amongst various others, were very vocal, and what became clear is actually people's thoughts on what ICANN should and shouldn't do with its SSR remit suddenly became very crystal clear, and we were certainly one of the communities who we felt understood what ICANN should be doing and also shouldn't be doing, and that was reflected in a lot of the feedback across. So it is interesting that when it was felt that this may conflict with beliefs that the community held, actually people felt they had a very clear understanding of what it should be. So it might be worth just looking back and thinking about what it was that we wrote as a community during that time.
Anne-Marie?
The recommendation I tried to brought this issue up at a Jamboree meeting in Frankfurt in the security working group, and there was some questions that I rose in that moment, that was what it really does mean to coordinate at the overall level the global internet system of unique identifiers. That is quite a vague formulation, so that is something that we probably would like to elaborate a little bit more. Second question is, what are the limits of that coordination role? Are there any way to, you know, just define it a little bit clearer? And the third question was, what does it mean to ensure the security and stability of the global internet's unique identifier system? Ensure is, again, another very vague word. So if we could be a little bit more specific in what terms or wordings that is used in this paper, I think that would be a clarification for the community.
So one of the things that we were trying to do was not use this as an opportunity to rewrite the bylaws, but also to take all of the foundational documents and put them in a way that provides clarity in what ICANN's position is and is not in the security space, because if this helps strengthen where ICANN's role is, perhaps it helps provide more support for participating in ICANN's activities and making everyone understand where we have a role and do not have a role in the space.
One of my concerns is, is it a situation where we have the responsibility but not the authority? And I don't want to be put in a position like that. So that's one of the reasons I'm seeking clarity. I don't want ICANN to be in that position where governments of the world are expecting one thing, but in reality, you know, the community doesn't want us to perform that. That's a mismatch of expectations. And so we need to, hopefully through this process, we'll understand what are the expectations of the community. And if the board needs to adjust something, that's what the board will do.
So one other good point that I wanted to make about this isn't so much about defining what ICANN staff's role is in security, stability, and resiliency, but trying to put some greater clarity of what the ICANN community role may be in this area. But and if that's the answer, then it would be good to hear that.
So probably one additional question that is picking up on what Anna Maria said. To a certain extent, it looks like we are playing ball with each other. So we ask ICANN to precisely state what they feel they should be responsible for, but we are not giving them a precise definition what we want them to do. And finally, we would just end up in terms that could and will be interpreted just as the very occasion arises. So what we really should try to is to state out very clear what our expectation from ICANN or of ICANN really is. Anybody answering?
I don't have an answer to that question, so I was politely waiting for somebody to jump out and start shouting, or nobody. Now, I had a comment on the previous remark.
So go on, Ronald.
Looking into what the ICANN community would be in this sense, there's no such thing as the ICANN community responsibility. The ICANN community is not a single entity, and I think it's a lot of players. It's not a constant. It's always moving, that community. Organizations enter it or other organizations leave it. And the parties in that community have their individual responsibility. And I don't think it's of any use to try and make a sum of those individual responsibilities. It's a big job. It's not a constant. Serves nothing. It's better to focus on ICANN's responsibility, ICANN, the corporation.
So are you basically advocating that it's impossible to state what we are expecting of ICANN and what we are not expecting?
No. I think your plan is to state ICANN, the corporation's responsibility. But there was a remark that it might be interesting to look at the ICANN community's responsibility. And I think that's dead end. Don't go there.
Okay. Good. Any further questions on recommendation number one? Comments? No, it doesn't look like that. So let's move on to recommendation number three. Could you move downwards to... three, which is supposed to be four in a new version, as far as I know. So probably we should just read it out once again. So ICANN should document and clearly define the nature of the SSR relationship it has within the ICANN community. And specifically, there had been a couple of questions being pre-phrased. If you could just move on a little bit downwards. Like, what is ICANN's coordination role with the root server operators? So would you like to comment on that one and dive into those questions? Any comments on that? Or even more in general, what is ICANN's role? What are you expecting of them?
So one thing is, if this helps to be seen as the start of a longer conversation, that we're not looking for immediate answers right now, with the, even though this document is out for comment, this was labeled a draft, and it was intended to start some community conversation. So that may take quite a bit of time. It may take us through the next meeting or two, but this was part of a longer process. So that was, I think that was part of the direction from the SSRT that ICANN should develop this. We don't think that this is a statement that can be developed overnight, and that this would take some time, but that the community might benefit from this type of discussion.
So again, just a little bit of feedback. When we developed this recommendation, what we recognized as a team when we were doing the research into it is that the way the nature of the individual relationships between ICANN and the various parties, so if you take, for example, the SSAC and the RSAC, so one is a board-mandated group that is designed to provide feedback to the board on security issues. And then you have the RSAC, which is a collection of root server operators who formed informally from the sort of the mists of time, essentially, when right at the very early, the genesis of the internet, and has then been sort of folded into the ICANN community. Both have got very different start points. And because of that, very different relationships with ICANN. And we felt that what was really important was that ICANN documented and made it really clear what the expectation on those relationships was, what ICANN was expecting to get out of that relationship, and how it could use that relationship to best further its SSR mission. So although there is some focus there on root server operators, this was meant to be, and I know you guys are interpreting it this way, as a very general way of managing those relationships and making it clear to all of us here in the room, so we can say, I understand, ICANN, that the relationship between party A and party B is expected to be like this, and this is how you are using it best to achieve your SSR goals. I think having that clarity prevents a lot of misunderstandings, and we saw that around the root server operators and people's expectations of what RSAC should and shouldn't be doing, and that differed very, very widely across the community. And if you look, for example, at the root scaling study is a great example of who should have done the root scaling study. Was it RSAC? Was it SSAC? And so we tried to reflect that in this recommendation, and also the following recommendation, which says once you understand these, then make sure you use them to the best of you, the best you can. So, sorry, a little bit of background to help that.
So any further comments to that one? Yeah, Roloff?
I think where you get specific, it gets better. But if I saw correctly, it's very generically formulated. And it comes back to my previous comment that if it's the ICANN community, that's too broad. It's better, I think, that you focus on organizations of which you know that they play an important role in this respect, and there ask ICANN to formulate its relationship with them. But if you formulate it as broadly as the ICANN community, you know, it's a big job, but it will keep the whole organization occupied if they want to do it well. And then, so it's better to focus on specific organizations, I think. That would be my recommendation for this recommendation.
And I think to put your mind slightly at rest, Ralph, we used the word ICANN community. What we didn't want to say was be specific with you should develop your relationships with party X and party Y. We wanted to say within the umbrella, and there's a really nice, well-defined organization chart. What we were referring to there was there are a number of defined relationships here. Make sure you understand them properly, rather than the sort of generic community as a big group.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, perfect sense.
Any further question? If not, then at least there's one that would interest me. Number two says, should ICANN develop a process for transitioning a root server? Should a root server operator seize that role? And this kind of parallels what I see in the process of specifying what is needed for new GTLDs. So over there we saw loads and loads of details what has to be done, and I can take an active role in prescribing processes in the case of something happen. And I feel that those advices and processes would just be generic because probably as even referring to what Rudolf said before, the problem at hand may be in a specific operator or a specific organization, not so much seen in a generic way where one solution fits everything. So if you ask to develop a process in a clear, rigid way, I would just wonder whether this would be feasible or not.
I think the idea on this, well, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is it something that the root servers themselves should sort out, or does ICANN even have a role to play here?
Any further questions? If not, so let's try to get a broad picture of the opinion in the room once again, as we did with recommendation number one. So just please raise your green cards if you feel no further comments needed and the recommendation number three is okay. Do I see any green card? Now? Okay, thanks. So this is probably like 10. As I learned, orange has a special meaning. This time, orange means, well, I'm not so sure right now. I gotta read my way through a little bit more into detail and just do not want to comment right now. So who's still in an innovating position? So 3. And I don't see that this is a good recommendation whatsoever is red. Anybody's raising red? Be prepared to be asked what is wrong. It doesn't look like it. I mean, I realize that we are having trouble even if we do finish sessions earlier, not only when we're finishing sessions late. But I'm really kind of inclined to enter that risk if nobody of the fellow panelists would just like to comment further on what's there is. Patrick.
So I guess our big message is that this is part of a continuing dialogue that we want to have with the CCTLD community and with the rest of the stakeholder groups as well. We'll be going and talking with others today and throughout the week. There is still time to comment not only on the draft statement, but also on our FY13 SSR framework, and also on the final report of the SSR review team. And so all of the next steps for us would be obviously to take in the public comment and revise the statement, but also we will have to develop an implementation plan based on the 28 recommendations, and that would be published. We're going to continue to work to provide more information and greater reporting of what not only the security team is doing, but how ICANN is meeting those recommendations, and providing greater clarity around budget and our activities. So we've been listening over time from the comments from this community and others. And you have other thoughts?
I mean, it's funny how with so few comments, every comment really counts. So we're not in a situation where we have 300 competing voices on this. So if you can, just take the time. Any comments are very valuable to us. And this seems to be an area where we haven't gotten enough high-level feedback. And that's, you don't have to get specific. Just give us even your reaction to some of these questions. Thank you.
Jeff, on that note, we've had a bit of a problem with the length of comment periods just lately. And I know personally, of course, there's nothing worse than not having any comments, because it really, you don't know if it's just because people didn't have the time or don't care or whatever. Has there been consideration to extending the comment period on this one?
Yeah, so I know, this particular document was posted in mid-May, and has already gone through its initial 30 days. And now we're in the reply period, which is technically to reply on the comments that have been received, which some of them have been quite thorough. But given the timing of the meeting and input that we've received from some others, I don't see a problem with providing more time for the community to provide input for this. I mean, especially on this draft statement, this is a longer term. There's no rush to seek for it to get approved. This is more where we really are trying to generate some community dialogue, and if that takes time, that's fine.
That would be welcomed. I'm not guaranteeing we'll all find the time to comment, but I think it would give you some clearer steers. And certainly, as you know, a whole raft of documents and all sorts of things came out, and then we have the meeting itself, which makes it quite challenging, particularly for some of the groups, to get comments together.
One more thing that might be helpful for us, especially on the FY13 framework, recognizing that there are quite a number of documents that get posted, it might even be helpful to hear whether it's still necessary to have a formal comment period on the annual framework rather than just a posting and acknowledgement and briefing of the contents. So providing the transparency and posting it every year, I think, is important, but it might also not be necessary to conduct public comment on every single document that ICANN publishes. That I'll leave that as something that's open to input.
Okay, so thanks. Jack, one additional question.
Jacques Latour, Syrah. Patrick, if you can provide a description of a high-level overview of your security organization, like how many people you have, what kind of stuff you do, that would help put this in perspective on maybe highlight or gaps that might be apparent or...
So Patrick mentioned that Part B of the framework goes into more detail, but if you're not familiar with the security team, we have a part of the team, two people that focus primarily internally, and then we have four, counting Witt. Yeah, so myself, Patrick Jones, John Crane, Rick Lamb, Jeff Bickers, Sean Powell, Whitfield Diffie, and Dave Piscatello. Make up the security team, and so half of our majority of our activity is outward facing, dealing with education, training, coordination, and then we have the internal functions, IT responding to attacks against either ICANN systems or auditing internal systems, and so if you look at our budget, and our budget looks really large, it also includes on-site security for conferences. So generally we deal with all of the, anything that touches security or risk kind of lands in our camp, and then a lot of travel. So while the budget may look large, it's not as, it's covering a lot of bases. And so what we're trying to do here is sort of narrow our focus. Anything that can give us some clarity will really help. We have a security team page also at ICANN.org/security/en/security, and that'll give you a bit of an overview of the security team and some of the stuff we're up to, and where we'll be speaking or where we'll be participating or providing trainings in the future.
Okay, so thanks to my fellow panelists, and thanks to the whole SSR team for their work. If you still do have any comments, just feel free to convey them to any of the members of the SSRRT team. I think they will be most grateful for anything. And as I was not supposed to be here, but I can use this as a marketing pitch, I still will do. Because one thing I forgot to mention about the DSSA is that there is a first stage report out. And if you would just feel like looking into DNS stability, security, and analysis, just feel free to browse the websites of the CCNSO or our joint project website and just dive into what this working group has been doing. So, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Jörg. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Jeff. Bear with us a moment. We seem to have lost some panelists for the next session. Okay, so we're going to move on in just a moment to our new GTLD session. Whilst we're getting set up for that and trying to track down our missing panel members, let me just give you a logistical update for the CCNSO dinner for this evening, because I know that's incredibly important to people. So we are going to meet in the lobby here at 6:45 at 6:45. And we will walk. We will walk to the restaurant. It's a 10-minute walk, apparently, but one could also do that by taxi if that is easier, or if one's running late, of course. The address of the restaurant is on the beer mat, which is also the ticket, and we very much look forward to seeing you all there, and also must express, and we'll do it tonight as well, our appreciation of the Czech Registry, who are the sole sponsor for the CCNSO dinner this evening, which is very much appreciated. Have I waffled enough, Fika?
Thank you, Leslie. We will move on now to the next session on the new GTLD application period. We expected to have somebody from ICANN to come and join us, and it's possible that somebody will come and join us where they had been told. So we will see if they come during this time. We have a specific presentation also from Andrei Kolesnikov from the Russian CTLD. We'll talk about the new GTLD application experiences from a CCTLD point of view, and has prepared a presentation and understand it's going to run for quite a while. And we'll take on questions afterwards. It's an interesting topic because there are a good couple of CCTLDs, it seems, were involved in the new GTLD application period, I mean application process, including the CCTLD from which I come as a lay. So yeah, Andre, would like to hear from you what your experiences were with the application process, were there issues and the tests and stuff. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, I hope that some ICANN representatives at least can hear the record afterwards, because it's actually some conclusions and some information very helpful to strengthen their operation level. Okay, let me start. Being a GNSO member a year ago, for 2 years serving at GNSO, I declared my involvement in some potential new GTLD projects. They came through, and as a member of the board of the Smart Internet Foundation, which applied for .DT IDN, and the chairman of the board of the Technical Center of the Internet, which operates the Russian national domains, I was getting and receiving management reporting regarding the drafting and writing the documents for the application as a technical platform for 3TLD applications from Russia. There is definitely one important and significant positive side of this exercise, of this new GTLD application process. First of all, it helped our technical operations to shape up, strengthen documentation process-based, and build a real contingency plan which makes sure that our national infrastructure, the technical center runs the technical infrastructure for .ru, is in the good hands and will never fail. Now we have our set of documents and process and in place as it should be. So there was about 14 people from the Technical Center of the Internet working with the application submission, and we didn't involve any external consulting contractor. And also we have a very nice experience, because we are able to compare the process of fast-track IDN TLD documenting and filing the new GTLD applications. And let me tell you in advance, it's completely different stories. And this is emphasizing the gap between the GTLD world and CCTLD world. This difference, this gap is in the process, and it has nothing to do with is actually technology. Okay, so we got five bullets. I'll try to be as fast as I can. So there were new GTLD program application guidebook issues we faced. There were new GTLD program customer service problems. There were some country-specific things because you know, every country has a different level of taxation and other things. And of course, test experience working with online application and the batching process concerns. The last one, I'll be short, because there is a lot of thing, there are a lot of discussion going about the batching. You know, just summarize whatever was told yesterday at the meeting.
Andre, could I just interrupt and encourage you to speak a little slowly? Don't worry, we're okay for time.
Ah, okay.
But I'm aware some people have don't have English as their first language.
Like I am. Okay, thank you. Okay, so let's go into the guidebook issues first. It is interesting to compare the new GTLD application with IANA evaluation questions for CCDLD delegation. In IANA's demand for country code delegation, you can answer to the questions whatever you think is appropriate. Okay, they ask you, like, describe your technical infrastructure. And like, well, our technical infrastructure is like this. Okay, and they don't give you a particular, you know, tips to answer. They just say, whatever you have, write it on. If it fits our demand, which our requirements, which nobody knows, will delegate the domain. It happened basically for the .rf IDN delegation. It was a rather complicated process, but we went through because of the good technical infrastructure and the good shapes in process and shapes. But the difference in application guidebook, there are still many questions of this kind allowing interpretation. It's like writing the application, answering the questions is like writing a novel about your operations. And I was asked during some press conference how the application looks like, and my answer was, it's like a filing NASDAQ documents, but it gives you the ability for improvisation. In many evaluation questions, you first ask a question, oh my God, I know the answer, and there is a problem because the answer is too short. And we need to add some air to the concrete and short technical statements, because otherwise our application may look inconsistent and short. So instead of two paragraphs of statements about our Oracle, for example, Oracle as a database program, you end up with five pages of text defining simple things around. Okay, now about the cross references. That's really interesting. Actually, Werner Straub at CORE provided a great example of cross references recently at the conference in Moscow. Cross references, which are dead ended at the password protected page. I didn't put it on the slide, but there are some. So, IGB application guidebook contains references to different sources, and sources have the links to other sources. And we really believe that keeping things together would add much more value to and save time for the applicants. Also, it has links to some archived ICANN working group materials, which you have to dig really deep to find it out. Also, there are some things like application guidebook revisions, which really add some hell and fire into your process. There are, you know, like 1, 2, 3 versions during the process. When we start, our guys start writing the application, there were 3 changes. And not all the requirements in the application guidebook not finalized. For example, there is a statement that there will be a trademark clearinghouse, there will be file zone access distribution process, there will be Ibero, there will be URS, but none of these final documents existed when you writing the application. So you kind of have a picture in your mind how it may look like, but you don't know exactly, and if it looked differently at the end when it was accepted, what you're going to do? This is really weird. And there is, of course, the language specifics in the documentation. The revisions, for example, translated into Russian language, was always late, so you have to, for some of the people who don't speak English natively, who run the technical operations, have to base their answers on the previous releases of translated application guidebook. And of course, there is a strange thing, we call it the groundless. It's a minor thing, but it's groundless division of evaluation questions into publicly available and closed ones. There are some statements made that, you know, this information should be protected, this information should not be protected, but we don't know why it was done like this. But the main conclusion is that it's the guidebook is really complicated document, has a lot of cross references, and it's not in one place, and it's hard to work with. Okay, now let's go to the next thing. It's okay. So, careless reading of applicants' requests and attachments. Sometimes we ask the question and get a complete different answer. Probably, maybe some things were due to the translation or due to that we speak different languages. But, you know, we ask the question and we got an answer to some other question. It's very weird. also there's a low response rate. The best we got was 2 days, but usually it's much lower, much longer. It's up to 14 days in response time. Also, it's very interesting. Before we send a request, we actually examine all available documentation and all cross references. Go very deep on the cross references, and we get a feedback like go to this reference and read it, but there is nothing in. Also, it's very interesting to mention that the priority special service level we provided to applicant who already paid the $5,000 deposit. So basically, it was a clear answer. You know, the people who paid will get the faster response. But as far as I know, all applicants should be treated equally. And there was a weird thing that we got customer service on Saturday. Asking us to provide some changes in the text and setting up the feedback from us for the next Monday, and like we don't supposed to work. We work, of course, around every day. I mean, even the weekends, our shift operators. But we also got a manager of the application on a vacation, so she has to carry with an internet connection with her. So let me put it like this: the service must be really improved in the customer area from the ICAT side. And the next one is country specific details. And first of all, before the program was approved by the board, a few times we asked at the working meetings, guys, we have a different tax requirements, we have a different billing rules, we have a different law base in our country, and it's applicable for many, many countries. Why don't we in advance agree how we deal with the contractual issues, because we cannot pay without the contract? So here we go. We have to pay $5,000 deposit, okay? We can't, because we need a pro forma contract. And the problem was solved on request, should have been resolved in advance. We just spent a lot of time defining this contract, working on the terms and conditions, etc., etc. It was known in advance, like few months in advance before the launch. And so that was a major problem. And there was one case we were asking for a particular question. We have to go up to the CEO of ICANN to demand an answer. So, you know, the block number 3 here is also part of the customer satisfaction, which needs to be approved. Okay, let's go to the application system experience. Most actions which when you work with a application system is a pop-up messages which come up after you make some action. Okay, there are a lot of things which are not duplicated by the email. A lot of your actions when you change something, you upload something, and there is no email confirmation. Also, email confirmation sends only to the primary contact, and that's what I said before. One of our managers went to the holiday, and she has to carry a laptop and take care of the internet connection daily, because there was a service messages coming to the primary contract, not to the secondary one, even though they're asking for the secondary one. If they don't use it, very strange. Also, task interface description in application guidebook differs from the online interface. It says special note. It's very interesting. The applicant guidebook always takes precedence. If you see any discrepancies between TAS and the AGB, please follow the AGB. That says explicitly. That's really weird. And of course, when the TAS system was halted due to the security file name issues, we really believe that was not a technical problem. That was a not thought through problem. The guys who designed the system, they really didn't thought through all these moments. And also the recent experience due to the batching experience, due to the digital archery experiments. If two users try to connect the Citrix as a platform at the same time, the system denies the password and offers the second user to enter a new password. That's a new bug we discovered. Very weird one. Okay. Batching process and applications review concerns. I mean, I should not say it's just addressed, especially at this ICANN meeting, just addressed from all the stakeholders that the Arcury process is really secretly developed, and we don't know. Actually, we tried to make some discover of the thoughts which were discussed publicly in the past that says that, for example, there should be a competition in the Arcury, and we ended up with the war of robots. Even in this low number of the applicants who already shot at the target, there was a fight of robots because everybody used the scripts, everybody planned the ping delay. And basically what you have at the end of the day is really a randomizer. It's a random lottery based on latency of the network at the particular moment of time when your robot press a button. Also, we don't know who is judging the applications. Well, I really don't know. I can say that we're hiring the people, we putting the best efforts. I don't know how many people here in this auditorium involved in really reviewing the applications. Maybe it's just a common sense that, for example, most of our colleagues here did not apply or did not have any conflicts of interest with the new GDLD. Why not using some of the experienced people who really run the big national domain infrastructures in revising the applications for the new GTLDs. I think it would be fair to have some of the experts even presented in this auditorium in this process, but I think nobody involved into this. And of course, immediate result after the digital archery, after the applications was published, we got spam. We received tons of proposals from different companies, offers to generate secondary timestamp for money. So this is what I call the robot war, because for money you can order a company with a hosting in Los Angeles next to the computer which offers you the button you have to press, and so that's basically batching concerns. And I said that there is no place for questions. It's really time for discussion, and I'm really happy that at this ICANN, this particular ICANN meeting in Prague, there's a lot of discussion finally going on. It's really weird that, the people paid a lot of money, people agreed with some terms and conditions, and now there are some things like, okay, we got your money, we got your applications, but, let us resolve your problems with your participation because we got some problems. It's really a strange experience, but there is now, it's not a tragedy, I believe. I think that at this particular meeting and with involvement of the different parties, the problems will be resolved finally, and there'll be a new GTLDs coming online, and we have to be part of it, whatever we want it or not, but it will influence our business, our CCTLD business anyway, because you cannot hide. There'll be 1,000 new GTLDs, and you have to live with them. So that was my short experience, and as I said in the beginning, it's completely different experience if when you run the IANA application for your CC country code, and when you write the application for the UGTLD. But in a way, It's similar, but much, much bigger. The document of the application is just huge, huge documents with, you know, hundreds of pages, a lot of diagrams, and it's actually exciting, exciting times. Thank you.
Thank you, Andre. Thank you, Andre, for your presentation. We are running well ahead of time, which is very impressive, seeing we don't have anybody from ICANN will be coming to join us.
Yeah, that's part of the experience. Then we'll, then the court will be sitting on the stage like last night, like, okay, I hear you, okay, great. Oh, yeah, it's a good idea. Hmm. Cool.
Thank you, man. Well, let's give him a little bit of some space to attend to the problems. But I would suppose that there are questions or comments to what Andre has spoken here about in terms of experience, if any of the CCTLD representatives here have any experience dealing with the going through the application process, and especially this TAS, the system. We had also experience, and some of the points you are raising are similar to the encounters we had in ZA, putting in four applications for the new GTLDs, not to mention the issues of Forex, you know, trying to get money paid into the into ICANN, you know, and I don't know, if somebody didn't, or anything didn't happen to that test, maybe one or two of our applications could not have made it in time because of Forex issues. So when whatever happened to the system eventually became a blessing in disguise for some of us. I will take questions or comments on what Andre spoken about or on the ICANN test system. I see a hand at the back there.
Andre, I'd be interested to hear your view about the, having one batch and the point that somebody made that about two-thirds of all the applications are made by about four applicants.
You mean yesterday come in?
Yeah, yeah. And from your point of view, my second question, which would you fear a one batch or would you prefer multiple batches?
Well, the second question is a result of the first. There is a simple mathematics. There are conflicting applications. First of all, there are IDNs, right? Second, there are conflicting applications which want the same string, but there are many applications. Okay, just by common sense, the conflicting applications may go the last because it will take longer to resolve the issues. Who will take it? Auction, or they will agree, or they negotiate. It takes a lot of time. It's not an easy process. And IDN, if we put IDNs in the first, there are 100-something IDNs, we expand what is the mission of ICANN is actually expanding the, you know, the namespace, the ability to use non-Latin characters. So you basically put first in the one batch, you put the first IDNs, then you put a non-conflicting application. Also, there was a suggestion, I don't know who yesterday who told, that there is an applicant with multiple applications, so let the applicant build the priority within their application. So instead of using the geographical chunks of the applications, you build the applicant with multiple applications and take one from the top on the round-robin principle, the same, without geographical distribution. So basically the guys with a single application who want something simple go to the first position, and then the multiple applications build up in the round robin scheme. But if you then you can add up maybe 20 applications will be stopped by the GAC. There will be at least, I don't know, maybe 10 applications will be conflicting in terms of security of the strings. So basically you end up with 1100 applications, 1100 unique strings, and this is a platform where you go forward, and how you manage them inside, which gets the best priority. Actually, you know, 15 months, it's okay. Especially, I can have a lot of money now after the So, you know, they can hire, I don't know, they can hire the people from your community. That's one of the concerns. Like, where are all these people who actually manage the big national domains? They're not involved in this as a technical ground. And the second question, the answer, my point of view is that it can be one batch. Okay, it will take longer. And how it will be within this batch? I don't know, alphabetically. Why not? I don't care, actually. I mean, if it's 15 months for all the applications, it's fine.
Thank you, Andre. It seems that we have no more questions, no more comments. I see no hand going up. I have Leslie.
Okay, so let me try some cards a minute. Is there interest or passing interest or no interest in this topic? So, interesting, don't really know, really not interested. Useful to get some sense of the room. Annabeth?
It would have been more interesting if someone from ICANN were here to listen to us, because they should hear the interest.
Yeah. Ever since this started, we have been chasing up somebody from ICANN because they had accepted an invitation for this session.
I know.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I hereby accept the invitation.
Thank you so much. You weren't the original invitee, but you are, of course, welcome.
This is about
UGTLD.
That's about practical experience.
That'll teach me to stand still in the hallway while Bart's walking past, then, won't it?
And actually, given that wonderful timing and the person who's arrived, the thing I was going to throw into the room is there of course is some interest in this. Maybe a more longer term conversation for CCs is about the monetary aspects of this program and the effect on the longer-term finances of ICANN. And it'd be helpful to understand, given that you've now arrived, Chris, as to what the board's plans are for having a conversation with the community about that. So Andre gave a fantastic presentation on some of the challenges so far in the programme.
Can I say just in one word what I said? It was all about the operations of the ICANN, how company run the business, how they manage the people, how they treat the customers, the customer experience, and what can be improved. That's basically it.
Okay.
It's a simple thing.
So maybe the easiest way of doing this is if I just start, I'll talk a little bit about money as much as I know about what we know. And then if you just ask me whatever questions you want to ask me, and I've got like 15 minutes, so possibly 20. So on the money side of things, so everyone's clear, it's the GTLD money is being kept in a separate bucket, right? So it's not being mingled with the rest of ICANN's money. There are the funds basically split up into the costs of running, the costs of the outside consultants to do all the evaluation, etc. There's the legal risk fund, and I'll get back to that in a second. The current budget, which has been released, the GTLD budget, is projecting what to some people seems like a very small surplus of some 30-something million dollars. Now, there are a couple of reasons for that. The first reason for that is that the legal risk fund is in the budget at $120 million. Now, the reason for that is because the original work that was done says that was... As you'll remember, the assumption all along with this was we worked on the basis of 500 applications, right? So the assumption was not that there would only be 500, but the numbers we used were 500. And the actuarial assessment of the legal risk was $30 million, which equates to $60,000 per application if you have 500 applications. What has currently happened in the budget is that has simply been extrapolated at $60,000 per application to $120 million. So whether that's correct or not, we don't know. There needs to be some work done. My gut feeling, speaking entirely personally, is it probably isn't. It's probably too much. But that's we need to do some... Yeah, don't panic, Rolf. It's not more than that. But we need to do some work. But the current projections, even if you assume that, the current projections are a surplus of $30 million. Now, then there's a separate amount of money, which no one knows how much this is, and that's the result of any auctions that may take place, right? And there's a little bit of confusion, I think. Am I talking? Is this the right stuff that you want to hear? Am I?
I think it can be. I guess it's the how do we have a longer term discussion. Apologies, Chris. I mean, you're on the spot.
That's okay. You tell me what you want. It's fine.
The Secretariat organised ACRAM.
I've heard that. Yes.
And it's unfortunate. We seem to be missing him.
Yeah. So if you want to have a, what you're talking about is, which I think is what I'm getting to, is what do we do with the money? How do we have a longer term discussion about it? Right. So there's an understanding in the community that the auction funds there would be a process for deciding what to do with those. So you'd find out how much they were, and then you'd do a policy process or something that the community would decide, and people have talked about setting up a foundation and all sorts of possible models. So there is a process there for that. What there isn't a process for is what do you do with the surplus, assuming there is a surplus, in respect to the actual application fees. And the calls have already started by a number of applicants to say, well, clearly you've got way too much money and you should give some of it back to us. So that is as far as that has got, because there has been no discussion about what to do with any... In other words, if the cost recovery price of $185,000 turns out to actually be $100,000, what do you do with the 85? I mean, my immediate reaction, again, speaking personally, is you give it back. I mean, it doesn't make any sense not to. But there is a challenge in that, in the legal risk fund. It doesn't matter how much money is in there. The challenge is how long do you run that for? In order to, you know, you can't obviously 3 weeks is not long enough, but is it 3 years or 6 years? So you might be looking at, you know, just thinking out off the top of my head, you might be looking at staggered refunds, etc. If there were a surplus in respect to the application fees and a surplus in respect to the legal fund, but there is no formal process in place at the moment to deal with that, and clearly there should be.
I'm a guy with a technical background. Many glitches, many problems which the applicant faces in the process of the applications. All these technical glitches, all these stopped procedures, then the open procedures. To my opinion, happens because I can, as a company, as a people who does the daily job, is not funded and it's not structured to be a real operational, big, serious company which runs, thousands of applications of new GTLD. You have to have the good paid people. Of course, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of legal guys in ICANN who really runs the operations, which is, to my opinion, adds up the risk. That's why the legal fund for the risk is so high, and the people. It's like running, I don't know, the telecom business. This must be an organization in place which takes care of the texts, online applications, search rule things. It's plenty of money that nobody will complain if I can't start spending more on its daily operations. That's what I think.
So, is it okay if I... So there's like about 5 points wrapped up in that. The first is a comment about the professionalism of the organisation. There's a comment about the need to spend money on the organisation, and let me deal with that by simply saying yes, but there was a clear undertaking given to the community that the GTLD funds would only be used for the GTLDs. And so if at the end of the day there's a surplus and the community says, and the community, including the applicants, says don't give it back to the applicants, spend it on something else, well, that's fine. But until that happens, we'll do nothing with that money other than spend it on new GTLDs. I think, really, the... the key issue is to get through the process, hopefully without any more glitches or judders or quivers or whatever, and actually, because it's not until you get to the end of the process that you know if there's any money left or not. But those who think they're going to get money now, there's a huge amount of assumptions being made about the fact that the budget's padded, etc. I apologize, I stole the microphone. Some things never change. You can ask me whatever you like. I mean, I'll happily try and answer it for you. Okay.
I'm not going to ask you about the customer experience and why it's not so good.
Well, because the term customer and service don't go together very well. And that's not just in ICANN.
Hello, Annabeth Lange, .no. Little other angle on this. The evaluation, Chris, after both on the glitches and all the technical stuff, but also how does the market absorb all these new things? How have you planned to do an evaluation afterwards compared with how fast you shall start the second round? I also heard rumors that someone wants to negotiate the applicant guidebook once more.
That second one is, I don't know if someone does, but I can pretty much guarantee you it ain't going to happen. The applicant guide, I mean, there may be little changes that need to be made, but the concept of renegotiating is just not acceptable. I think was your first question was, how do we assess the impact that the new GTLDs have had after we've released them? That's a really interesting question, because actually there isn't an obligation to do that. I mean, there's an obligation to check the route, to do a stuff on the route thingy, and there's an obligation to do a sort of a survey of the trademark clearinghouse, but there isn't any kind of built into the plan, there isn't any kind of thing that says, a year after we've released all these names, we're going to look at the market effect. Yeah.
But there was an affirmation of commitments.
Yes. Yeah. That the affirmation of commitment is the sort of fourth, almost invisible review, which is the consumer competition. That's the one you mean, right? It's the one everyone always forgets is there, because they always remember. I know you don't, Leslie, because that would never happen. But no. I mean, that's the one that people say, oh, there's the ATRT, there's the who is and there's security, but there is that also that consumer one, and I have heard zero about that, about plans for that, other than but clearly it has to happen, and it would be nonsensical to do it now. You go ahead.
Sorry, I'm stealing the mic because I have a mic in front of me. I'm as bad as you. So my point is, the affirmation of commitment review on this has been there for a long time, and what one might want to do is look at the situation pre the new GTLDs and ascertain some information, and then look at the situation post the new GTLDs. And if the baseline hasn't been established until way down the line, then that review is not going to be as informative as one might hope.
That's a very valid point, and a valuable takeaway. I will go back to where downstairs and make a note, because I think that's right. I mean, you need to benchmark from base, don't you? So, yeah, point taken. I agree. Annabeth.
That was my point, that you should have an evaluation before we go out with the second round as quick as possible, because that's what I heard in the big room yesterday, that should be done very quickly.
Okay. So there's actually two separate points. One is to do a baseline evaluation now, so that you start from the point of where we exist, and then there's a second point, which is then you do an evaluation quickly of what it's like in the new market. But the only point I would make is you need to decide when that's sensible, because it might not be sensible for, two.
It wasn't.
it was not the evaluation, I was told, that should be quickly, but the second round of applications.
I understand. Okay, thank you. Yes, and of course, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, we now know the names, we now know who applied, who didn't apply, etc. So there was supposed to be a chat about it last night, about this new second round, but it got slightly overtaken by some small batching issues. Anyone else?
How many applicants, if known applicants, failed to apply due to some bureaucratic or technical issues? Do you know?
I'm sorry, are you asking me how many people...
How many
organizations have not wanted to apply but were unable to apply?
Yes.
I'm not aware of any. If you're aware of some, then...
No, I'm just asking.
No, I'm not aware of any at all. There hasn't been a single... That's the first time that's been raised, and I would imagine that if you had wanted to put in an application and were unable to do so for some, what you believe is technical reason, then you would have told us by now, I would have thought. There are a significant number of applicants who are now asking if they can change their applications. Or rather, fix mistakes in their applications is perhaps a better way of putting it.
Thank you, Chris, for...
No. Rulof.
Chris, you said the legal fund was, what, 120 million? May I formulate a proposal? You pay me...
Does it involve anything to do with you and me, or is it...
With me, yes, not okay. With you, I think. I can pay me, let's round it off, a tenth of a billion US dollars, and I'll take on all the legal cases in this first round of new GTLDs. I'm not a lawyer, so that might actually work, and the money will be enough.
That's very sweet of you. Thank you. I really appreciate that. However, you have not had the benefit of going through a 2-hour discussion with not with you know, the usual suspects on the lawyer front, but with, you know, people who really understand this stuff, going through a 2-hour discussion about the sorts of things that might happen. And the sorts of things that might happen are not good. Now, I'm not saying that'll happen, but you know, good management dictates you've got to, as you know, you've got to take account of things. There's a point you reach where the risk is ridiculous, and so you don't bother about it. But there are heavy risks in this, heavy, heavy risks. I hope I've gone some way to being Akram.
Have
you guys complained about this room? It's appalling. Seriously, I mean, this is ridiculous. They can't...
Chris, we are still on the new GTLDs.
I thought I'd finished. I'm sorry.
No, in this room, we are still on the, the new GTLDs.
I'm going to leave then.
Quick question, maybe not to put you on the spot. Thank you, by the way, for doing as much as possible to clarify certain things. Maybe following up on Annabeth's question, obviously the test failure and the revelation of certain contact details on the day of on the big reveal day cast fairly, if you judge by media reports, a major doubt again on ICANN. Is it something that maybe from a board level that there's a plan to address before the next round? Because personally, I think it substantially casted an unnecessary shadow over ICANN, particularly with the WISIT and WTSA coming into play.
Yes. So when things like this happen in organizations, and this, ICANN's not unique, these things happen all the time. When things like this happen in organizations, the first job is to actually get past it and fix, you know, get things moving again. If you stop and start, you know, start deep diving into why it happened, you lose the main goal, and the main goal is to get the application window closed and to get the application starting to be evaluated. But that does not mean that you don't then go back and deep dive into what happened and why. And that has already started to happen, but is going to happen in respect to all of the issues that arose, and there were a number. Some of you may know that at the reveal in London, when the list was put up, the names in Arabic were actually backwards, which is, you know, fairly insulting to our Arab friends. So there are a number of issues, and they will be looked at. I won't take too much longer. Let's see. There's a confluence of events here, of course, because we have the launch of the GTLD program. We're into the evaluation stage now. We have a new CEO who isn't starting until October, so we have an interim CEO. Now, one way of looking at that is to say that that's awful and it's going to be really hard, but actually, my personal view is it's not. I think a three-month gap, if you will, is not a bad thing. The board will be actively is a better word, engaged to support Akram and to support staff. It gives them a chance to draw breath, and it gives Fadi an opportunity to be engaged, but not 100% engaged. But to answer your question, Vika, absolutely there will be an investigation, if you like, of what happened and what went wrong.
And the PR aspect, of course, that will go into play.
My personal view is that 75 to 80% of ICANN's issues are communications. That is a huge problem that needs to be sorted out.
Okay. In the absence of any other question or comment, the very interesting new GTLD topic, then Leslie, with your permission.
Thank you, Chris. The ICANN presence had been organised way in advance with our efficient secretariat, and you came, but you actually gave us answers, so that was much appreciated.
That's never going to happen again.
Okay, thank you, Chris. And we're finishing slightly early because of the lack of two people on this panel, I'm afraid, but that gives us more time to chat and network over coffee. Just like to say thank you to Andre and to Vika. You can come back and give us the latest instalment on your applications in Toronto. We're going to break for coffee now, and we're going to restart at 4 o'clock with our IDN session. Thank you, everybody.